What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Greetings, colleagues, and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. My name is Daryl Glover, and along with me is the lovely Jennifer Lyerly. And today we have a very special show in store for you. We're interviewing our friends from Uptown Vision, Dr. Saber and Gene Saber. Tell us a little bit about yourself and Uptown Vision.
I started Uptown Vision Clinic in 1991, opened up a cold practice right out of school, and immediately I found myself trying to not only do the eye examinations, but also to help sell eyewear, and that wasn't going so well. So within the first few months that I'd opened, I convinced Gene to come to the clinic and work with me, and 26 years later, we've been working together this whole time.
So I'm being kind of nosy, but how did you know Jean? Like, because you were working with all these like really big fashion companies. So like, how did he steal you away to go to the eye clinic?
Well, you know, that's a really great question. I was in retail and did all the frame buying. And I think really the thing that sealed the deal is that Mark said, well, you know, you're working for all these big corporations. And you're making them a lot of money. You're with top sales. You know, maybe it would be a better served if you came into that for our business. And so made some sense to me, but you know, I have to be honest, I was a little nervous about working with my spouse. A lot of couples these days are like, I don't know how I could possibly work with my husband or my wife. And so I was a little bit apprehensive about it, but you know, I just really enjoyed the fashion aspect of it. And it's really honestly been, it's been a ton of fun.
So let's talk about this a little bit more. Tell us a little bit more of, you know, what's the secrets to success of working with your spouse? I mean, I would love to work with my wife every single day, but I think I'll drive her crazy and she'll probably leave me. So please give me some tips.
Well, that's over the years, that's what all of our friends and many of our patients have asked us too. And they've stated the same thing as you just did, Daryl's thing. They can't even imagine that. You know, as it turns out, one of us being an optometrist and the other being an optician, we really have some separate roles within the practice. And I spend most of my time seeing patients in the exam room, and except for the handoff to the optical staff, and we have other opticians now besides Jean, but we just didn't overlap that much. And I let her run the optical and I take care of the optometric side of things, and we've just separated our duties. We just stay out of each other's way, and that's really worked well.
I just think at the end of the day, there's just a mutual respect for one another. I think that we have different skill sets, and I really appreciate Mark's technology-driven focus on things. Sorry for the pun there, but there's a respect on his side about, you know, just the analysis of, you know, retail and what's going on within fashion industry. And so I just think that we have a respect for our different skill sets.
I'm just picturing that, like, Gene, is there ever a time where he does a doctor optical handoff and you're like, that was terrible?
Okay. You need to... Okay, he is sitting right next to me.
How about this? Is there ever a time where he does an amazing handoff and he winks at you and you're like, yeah, that's my husband.
Yeah,
that's a better
question, Daryl. That is a better question. I have to say that we are, both of us, interestingly enough, are both firstborn kids. And we have just a natural caretaking ability that we use at the office. And in fact, as I was with a friend last night and she said, you know, you just love taking care of people.
Well, and I think the other thing is by the time patients are done having their eyes examined, pupils dilated, and gone over all the medical side of things and discussed some of the ophthalmic side of things, I think patients are generally appreciative of being done with that portion and on to the fun part, which is picking out eyewear. So I think when you keep it positive like that, most patients look forward to the transition from the medical side of things over to the retail side of things.
So I want to pick your brain a little bit on that, because you guys are so successful. How do you make the optical part fun? I know innately, like for someone like me, just shopping is fun, but not every patient really feels that way about it. So what do you do to draw that fun aspect out?
Well, I think from a few years ago, we were one of the beta test sites for like the Visi office, and having an interactive experience for the patient and the customer, being able to try on frames and actually see themselves know, side by side, and just having a different selection of glasses and frames available. We really go out of our way to go to Europe and bring back collections that are different and unique. And, you know, over the years, let's be honest, I mean, even before I got in the industry, I got my first pair of glasses in third grade, and I had a lot of bad eyewear. I mean, the selection back when I was a kid was pretty much like, here's the frame you can choose from that's in pink or blue. And now the selection of frames and lens technology is pretty amazing. I think going back to those days of having some bad fashion, we're just here to be right there for them and not have to be self-served.
Jean's right. People love our selection of eyewear. Many frames aren't generally available in the United States because we've gone to Europe and bring back small collections that few people in the United States have. So that creates a big interest and a fun factor. And lastly, I'll give some credit to Jean. She has this uncanny ability to just look at somebody in their face shape and know what would look good on them. And she'll often select an initial frame and put it on a patient. And the patient likes it and thinks it's great, but no one wants to purchase the first frame they put on. So they try on 20 or 30 more. And then I cannot tell you how many times patient circles back around to the first frame that Jean had shown them. So a lot of credit goes to Jean and her ability to just size patients up and figure out what would look great on them.
And I also think we have to mention that you guys always are wearing fabulous frames. I mean, when I see your frames and I feel your energy, it just makes me want to go buy a new pair of glasses. So, I mean, you guys just radiate that type of energy. So I would love to just be a fly on the wall and just see how your doctor optical transfer goes, as well as seeing the patient when they pick up their glasses to see how happy they are. Because I know your patients are extremely happy with the service that you guys provide, just because of the energy that you provide, the knowledge that you have, as well as just having the best of the best when it comes to frames in your optical department.
Well, one of my favorite phrases is when I'm working with a patient, it's like, no fashion, no fun. Today, it's amazing how you have patients or customers that come into your office. And I remember this one particular woman in particular who came in and I said, you know, are you looking for some new frames? And do you have a new prescription? And she says, no, I don't need a prescription. I just want to wear cool glasses. To imagine, you know, it used to be very utilitarian that you needed glasses and you had to wear them to the fashion aspect of things, where, you know, even on the runways, when you're looking at some of the spring and fall collections, a lot of the design houses incorporate glasses with their fashion. So our industry has really come a long way.
Well, you guys were mentioning how one of your real secrets for success is bringing these exclusive European collections. And when Daryl and I saw you recently at Vision Expo East, you were talking about you had recently been to Mido. Tell us a little bit about what that experience is like and like shopping for glasses and exclusive frame lines in Italy. It sounds like a lot of fun.
The thing that has impressed us is the size of the show. Now, for anyone that's been to Vision Expo East or West, certain it's easy to be impressed with the size of those shows. However, the European shows, the recent one in Italy, there were 55,000 people in attendance, and that is about double the size of a Vision Expo. Now, it's not just the number of people that attend, but because there is such a great number of folks, the amount of frames on display is tremendous. There are close to 7 football field-sized rooms that had displays of frames where vendors were set up and showing their lines. And also, we like how all the frame lines are just out in the open. All the vendors are on a main floor setting where you can walk around, even the highest end frames. They're not off in another building somewhere off site. They're not in suites that you have to go up elevators to find, etc. They're really wide open. You can walk around and see everything you're looking for.
Well, in fact, is to that point, the first time that we went over to a European show, it was a bit overwhelming, to be honest with you. It was like, where do I even begin starting on this? Because you've got row after row after row of frame vendors and manufacturing. In fact, there really isn't a lot of contact lens representation at those shows, nor is there a lot of instruments that are over there. So it's strictly the fashion aspect of it. But the thing that I really enjoy the most is being able to meet the owners, the designers and have a relationship directly with them. And you just don't get that every single day. And it's pretty special to imagine you meeting Giovanni, who owns Vanni, and you hear their story. And that particular family used to be in the automotive industry, and they went into eyeglass manufacturing, and they actually incorporated some of their techniques in the automobile industry into their frame manufacturing. And when you come back and you get those collections in your optical, to be able to like tell that story to your customer about a really family-driven business, I mean, there's an excitement, there's kind of an exclusive thing, and I think more importantly, they just love the story.
Absolutely.
I think you touched on like one of the things that make you guys so successful is being able to tell that story. So you find brands with a story that speaks to you, and then you communicate that story so well to your patient. And that's something that I know that many opticals really struggle with. It's something we're always constantly trying to figure out how to do where I work.
I would agree with your assessment there. I think the story is really important. Otherwise, a frame is just a frame. It may have some, it may be fashionable and have some style, etc. But when the patient hears the story behind that frame, then it adds a whole different dimension. I think that's true these days in a lot of retail. If you can tell a story, the patient embraces that to a greater degree, and they feel their purchase is more special because of it.
Did you see any major trends like coming out of Mido and Vision Expo this spring that you really feel excited about in eyewear for the coming year?
Well, I believe that there's a resurgence to the 70s and the 80s. A lot of gold in metals, very, very strong. John Lennon, I guess, is, you know, just the round metal frames are, I think, really huge. And I think the thing that I really take from those shows is how just about anything goes these days. You see color in plastics, you see old school 50s trends, and it's just kind of all over the map. But I would say the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway is that just a huge resurgence going back to metal frames and the incorporation of color. Silver used to be kind of the go-to, and now gold's really strong.
So what are you guys wearing right now? Personally, my favorite frame that I've been wearing over the last month or so has been a pair of RVS eyewear frames. And I just love the material. I love the shape. It fits my face perfectly. It's an independent eyewear designer. It has a story behind it. So I just feel good when I wear it. What are you two wearing?
Well, I know Mark right now, his favorite collection that he wears is Masanaga. And Masanaga is a Japanese company that started in 1905. So they've been around for a while. And they incorporate kind of an old school philosophy where they use old barrel hinging. For some of those people who maybe don't know what that is, it's like a Ford truck. It's like built to last.
Oh, my.
they're a little bit more solid feeling. Just the quality of their manufacturing is excellent. My go-to right now is some Celine frames that I've been...
Is it the black one I think I saw you in last time?
Yes, sir. Yeah. In fact, this is how ridiculous that is that I have the same frame in three colors.
Me too. That's the same thing I have with these RVS eyewear frames. I have it in three different colors.
Oh, no.
I have one for like a black one for computer glasses when I'm at work, and a brown one for computer glasses when I'm at work. And then my everyday wear and tear pair that I wear for when I'm running the streets.
Oh, that's so funny, Daryl, because honestly, when you really think about the variety and the selection that's out there, could you imagine you and I have the same kind of mentality? I think when something looks good and works, you just go with it, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, Gina, I have to say about you, like, I feel like that is just so iconic for you. I feel like those glasses are just like a part of your person. And I can't imagine seeing you in anything else at this point. But I just like know you in those glasses. They just fit. Once you become a fashion icon, you know you have a look to you.
How about you too, Jen? What are you wearing? What's your go-to?
You guys know, I'm sure people are getting sick of seeing me in my brow, but I have those Kiyo Yamamoto silver metal with the big brow bar piece. And I love those glasses. I just cannot get out of them. So my patients always like give me a little bit of a raised eye when I try to help them pick out stuff in optical. But, you know, I sell a lot of brow bars because of it. So it works.
There you go. You
see, that's something I never understand. I don't know why optometrists do not always wear glasses when they're in the office. I don't care if they're computer glasses over your contacts, but you have to wear something so patients see you wearing it. That way you could sell it. It just makes sense. I'm amazed by how many offices I go into and optometrists are not wearing glasses.
Boy, Daryl, that's just a great point. That goes back to your question about fun. We have virtually all of our employees all the time wearing our eyewear, and we have young employees in their 20s, and we have old employees like me, and we have a patient who's had LASIK, but she wears frames. And I couldn't agree more. If you're running an optical out of your optometric practice, the thought of not having just about all of your employees wearing eyewear, I just can't understand not having everybody wear eyewear.
Well, and with that being said too, Mark, I think that so many offices are like, well, you get one complimentary pair every year, and then and a set of lenses. And honestly, okay, let's just throw that out the window, because if you get a collection in and you've got a staff that tries on a frame and it looks great, why not have them wear it? Their enthusiasm is going to spill over into the patient experience. And, you know, you never get a second chance to make a first impression, especially your people in the front of your office, their receptionists or office managers. You know, everyone, if you can put on something, you feel great about it, it's just going to spill over to that patient experience.
Yeah, I mean, they just become more knowledgeable of the product that they're wearing. I mean, they'll know a certain hinge, or if it's all matte material that the designer uses. I mean, there's so much information you can gain by just wearing a certain style frame day in and day out, or switching them out. You just learn more about the product that you're actually offering.
Agreed.
Right. If you have a contact lens wearer that comes in, and they may be somewhat eyewear averse, but they look around and they see that everybody in your office is wearing stylish glasses and they look great in them, that's going to perhaps cause them to pause and ponder the thought of maybe buying some new eyewear. And the same with someone whose current eyewear is a few seasons old. They come in and they see the latest styles and they see the different face shapes, but everybody looks great in their eyewear. And again, it may just be the impetus to convince them to think about buying an updated pair.
So, so true. I want to throw one other little secret in. This is a big shout out to Barry, who's the optical buyer where I work. He'll oftentimes, when he brings in a new collection, you know, he'll pick out 40, 50 pieces and they'll say, and throw in one for my doc. And so then I'll get like a pair of glasses. But it really works, because if I start wearing that collection that's new, just like you said, Gene, then, you know, suddenly all my patients that have been staring at me in the exam room for the last 20 minutes, you know, they've really gotten a good look at that pair of glasses, and many times they want to go try that on. So it's a good trick of the trade to throw in one for the doc or someone who has high visibility to the patient.
Indeed. In fact, don't you find, guys, that when you wear something that they're like, I want to try on what you've got on.
Yep.
What are you wearing? I want to try on the one that the doc's wearing, you know? And so I think you lead by example.
Well, Gene, tell me how many times you have sold a frame that you're wearing, that the patient wants to purchase the frame right off your face that you're wearing.
Countless. I can't even tell you how many times that's happened. In fact, I had to stop wearing frames just because I know that the manufacturer was out of stock on some of the, on that particular style. So, I mean, you do lead by example. So yeah, it's crazy like that.
Yeah, I've run into that problem a few times as well. I've sold a lot of glasses just simply because of the glasses that I've worn during the examination. And what I started to do was the glasses that I wear outside of work,
right,
I keep outside of work, and I have a certain pair of glasses for the job, because I don't want everyone looking like me. You know, I picked the phrase because I think they look unique and I want to be, you know, a little different. So I have a certain style when I'm at work, and then I have a completely different style when I'm outside of work. So when people see me, they're like, hey, where'd you get your glasses from? Oh, come check out my office, or go visit my website if it's a pair of sunglasses or something like that. And it makes a big difference. And you are easily, it's easy to convert patients over by just wearing what you're actually offering. It makes a huge difference.
And there's a very, very little cost associated with that. If you think of it in terms of marketing and where you might be putting your marketing dollars, really just having your staff wear stylish frames all the time is not that expensive.
Well, your success as a practice goes a lot further than even in optical sales too, of course. I mean, Dr. Saber, you've been recognized as one of the leading voices in vision therapy. You've been awarded with the Silhouette Optical Academic Excellence Award, the Urban and Boerish Clinical Excellence Award, the Burnell Clinical Optometry Award, the Skeffington Clinical Excellence Award, So tell us about starting a vision therapy practice, and what would be your advice to doctors who want to follow in your footsteps?
Well, I selected optometry almost for the sole purpose of pursuing a vision therapy practice. And I selected the university specifically that I went to, which was Pacific University, for their strong vision therapy background and curriculum. And when I got out, my initial plan wasn't to open cold, but it just turned out that way. Having a little bit more time when you open a practice cold, I really was able to pour all of my energies into the vision therapy side of things. And I guess for anyone pursuing that these days, I would say that if you have that as your passion, which many, as it turns out, many vision therapy optometrists do have that, really just get behind that passion and follow it. And when you start out and you're building that aspect of the practice, reach out to fellow ODs in the community, many of whom don't necessarily want to do vision therapy in their own offices, but are looking for someone to refer those cases to. Of course, reach out to the local school systems, try to maybe do a little in-service at a local school. Also, I would encourage folks to get involved with the professional organizations, both COVD, OEP, and there are others that deal with traumatic brain injury cases and so forth. And also, in many of the bigger communities, there are local study groups where you and your fellow ODs that are interested in vision therapy can meet and share notes and pointers. And yeah, I would just throw all my my energies into it on the front end. It's certainly been the most rewarding aspect of optometry in my entire career.
Well, just like Dr. Saber, you've been so strong in fighting for vision therapy and making these changes within the industry to make that so much easier to give patients access to care. Jean, you are a leader within the Optical Women's Association. Tell us a little bit about that organization and what you guys do.
It was just a group of women that got together, and I think there were like maybe 10 of them, as the story goes, and they got together and said, you know, there's a lot of guys in this business, and how can we as gals kind of unite together and do something here? And they literally, I guess, at a hotel room, over some wine and cheese and crackers, decided to develop the Optical Women's Association. And more recently, met some students at SUNY University, and I was talking to them, and there are some female up-and-coming ODs. And I said, you know, what is the ratio at your school? And they said, you know, it's 80% women and 20% guys. And I am just amazed how our industry has changed so much. And right now, our growth is, I think we're up to 600 members currently in the Optical Women's Association. And we do things like offer continuing education, mentoring. We've just started a new ambassador program where we want to reach out to different businesses and the optical community to find out how we can best support the women within our industry. And so we're just, I guess, a lot of leaders from different aspects of the optical business, from manufacturing, and that could be like lens manufacturing, frame manufacturing, instruments. And it goes across all of the different areas of this business. And I tell you, I have met some pretty incredible human beings that I would not have had the opportunity to meet if I wasn't involved with this particular group.
You know, it's so true. By the numbers, we are growing as a profession very strongly with women, but it still seems like people will look around and say, like, well, what are you guys always trying to fight for? Why you need all of these associations? It's mostly women now anyway. We need women in leadership so much. I'm not going to tell the company because it's a really bad look, but I was at a dinner just a couple of weeks ago, and me and another fellow female optometrist, we're both young ODs, and we both have interest in speaking and getting more educational kind of background where we can give lectures and things like that. And we're talking to a representative for this pharma company, and he was like, well, it's probably not going to happen for you two. And we were like, what, you guys don't want young female speakers? And like, well, maybe we could have room for one. So you probably have to fight it out, but definitely no more than one. And I was just like, I guess he thought it was funny. You know, he chuckled a little bit. But this is very common within the industry where it's like, yeah, we realize it's all female, but you guys have a long way to go. Like, you're definitely not room for you at the top here. With the rest of us. So knowing that you guys
are... I would smack the hell out of them.
it's one of those things where you just have to like keep the look of utter shock and disaster off your face, because these are the people that are hiring the next speakers. Like, so you got to keep a smile on it. But it's just so defeating to hear these same things over and over again about how, yeah, it's a women's profession, but there's really very little opportunity for women in it. So I really applaud the work that you're doing.
Wow, that really sounds like 1950 instead of 2017, I guess. That's
I agree. Wow.
Absolutely. No, I think that we talk about, you know, is there a glass ceiling, or are there some barriers? You know, there's definitely going to be some barriers, and that, you know, perhaps that, you know, that's a part of, you know, that particular person's culture. But you guys are our tomorrow today. And, you know, I think that we all have a lot to share with one another, and our experience that maybe Mark and I have. But, you know, I think you guys also have a lot to share with us as far as how we can best, you know, meet the needs of younger patients and younger, you know, upcoming ODs and opticians. So I think that, unfortunately, that particular person that you were speaking to, I think, again, sorry for the pun, is a little bit myopic. And so, you know, that's really so sad for him, because I think that there are some pretty vibrant young up and coming ODs and opticians and other people within our industry. And like I said, I think that we're here to share with one another, and people should be open to that process.
So we're talking about the future a little bit. And I know, Daryl, we like asking people, what do you see in the future of optometry? There's so many seeming threats that are threatening our industry, whether it's online refractions or online sales. I mean, do you see anything in your practice that you envision even 5 years out that you feel like could be a real threat to how we practice optometry right now?
Well, my take on it at the moment is, I look back for just a second and look at the history of online contact lens sales, which have now been around for a good 15 or 20 years. I want to say the last statistic I think I read was that online contact lens sales account for maybe 15 or 20% of all contact lens sales. And of course, that's 15 or 20 years later. So I certainly think that online eyewear sales there will be some inroads made there. There's already been some inroads there. But I feel that there's is more likely to affect some of the lower end opticals that are out there that don't really work to distinguish themselves, that have the same product that everybody else has. And so I think for private practice optometry or opticals that stay sharp and really work on maintaining an interesting inventory and focus entirely on the customer experience and customer service, I think there will always be a market for patients who are looking for that type of experience. Now, there may be thinning out of practices that don't embrace that concept, but frankly, I see nothing but opportunity going forward. And I know that with time, those of us in private practice, we probably will work to incorporate the best aspects of online eyewear selection. There's no reason that we can't have some component of that on our websites and so forth, just like many websites now for private practices, you can order your contact lens refills on there. So I really see nothing but positive ahead.
With that being said, how do you guys feel about it? You know, that's our perspective. What's your perspective?
Well, I welcome some of this disruptive technology, not all of it. I mean, what we have to look at is, if we don't get involved with this, we're going to get kicked out of this. And I'd rather be in control of this disruptive technology than someone that doesn't have the education of an optometrist or optician. That way we can determine which direction this disruptive technology goes. Also, we have to keep in mind of the consumer, the patient. You know, folks want things soon as possible. And in order for us to please our patients, yes, we have to educate them about good and what's bad technology, what a comprehensive eye exam is, but we also have to be willing to satisfy our patient needs. Some of this disruptive technology is definitely going to help out, and some of it's definitely going to hurt us. But I think we have to sit down and have a conversation with these folks rather than just say no, 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 because there is definitely a need, because people are actually using some of these services that are out there.
I'm afraid that's true. One of the things that has been so striking to me in practice is when I pull over the phoropter, I'm surprised at how often a patient says to me, like, oh, you're still using that. You know, marketing works really well, and these companies have done a great job in marketing to make the phoropter seem like I'm out of date. And so as soon as they see it and me using it, it's automatically like, oh, this isn't as good of an exam as I thought it was going to be. So I still very much think that I will use a Veropter. I'm not saying that. But how do I incorporate more in different technology that really blows my patients away, other aspects of the exam? And so we do kind of have to be aware of the marketing that's going against us and then innovate and really make the patient feel like they've had a special experience in a different way if they're going to successfully be able to influence my patients into thinking the Veropter is old and useless. So, and I can take 10 minutes to diatribe to them why I love my Veropter, but really what I've done, and I don't know, Daryl, if you've ever done this in practice, you know, so the autorefractor will spit out prescription that we all know is terrible and we would never give our patients 9 times out of 10. And I'll sometimes at the end, if they've made a thing about the Veropter, I'll put in, and I'm like, let me show you the difference. So we still do this. And I was like, this is what the computer thought you were going to like. And my patient's like, oh, terrible. I can't see anything. I was like, I know. So that's what those online apps are going to be like. So that's why we're doing it this way. So one little marketing thing at a time on my side, I guess, to fight back.
Jen, before I left to come back to Nigeria from the States, you know, you're always telling me these stories, these horror stories that you have with the Veropter. And, you know, I've never really experienced one. But the last day I was seeing patients when I was in the States, I had a 52-year-old white female come in. And as soon as I entered the room, I had a big smile on my face. I shook her head. I was ready to just talk about her and learn more about her life and give her the best refraction ever. She stood up. She said, I'm sorry, but I can't have an exam today. I said, why, ma'am? You know, so I like, you know, made sure my breath was right. I made sure I didn't have anything in my nose. And, you know, I smiled. I made my smile even bigger. And she was just like, I'm not having an exam with that thing there. That I had an exam last year and that machine there didn't look like that. It was a digital machine and it gave me the best prescription I've ever had in my life. And she walked out on me. And I was like, I've never experienced that in my life. And what really blew my mind was that she wasn't even a millennial, you know, and she actually she knew about that technology. So that was the first time I ever experienced that. And the first person I actually thought about was you, Jen. I meant to tell you that a while back, but it really blew my mind. And this was in the Briar Creek area. So, you know, there's, people are, you know, they know the technology out there, but I've never experienced that firsthand, but I actually experienced it now, Jen. So I can feel your pain.
Because we practice in more of an urban environment, this is pretty common, but I swear, I mean, because of the digital world we live in, this isn't going to be just like a city thing. These kind of technologies are barely visible. Anybody who has Instagram has now seen it, an advertisement showing the Veropter like some sort of ancient torture tool. And that's what they come to associate with it. So it's going to be something that all of us will have to deal with. And it's not just crazy Jen stories.
I like your crazy Jen stories, though. We got to keep them up.
Well, Jen, I think the one interesting aspect of your take on that is the fact that these online companies have demonized the Veropter. They're like, how do we get people convinced that doing an exam online is legitimate or worth their time? And you turn around and you demonize a perfectly fine, in fact, excellent technology. And I don't know that we've ever had anybody that has yet raised that concern about the Veropter, but I do have some people that talk about, you know, looking into your phone to get your prescription. And we do, like you say, where we've got an auto refractor, and I like to explain to them, I said, now look, the auto refractor is great, but it's simply an eyeball measurement. It just measures the optical power just to the back of your eye, but it doesn't tell us anything about how your brain processes the two inputs, and that's where we use the Veropter to have you tell us what looks the best. And I like your idea at the end of showing them the difference between what the computer thought was appropriate and subjectively what they decided on. And then lastly, I'll just say we made the switch to auto Veropters about, 10 or 15 years ago. We were one of the first with that. And I would say for any OD looking to diminish the demonization of the Veropter, think about investing in an auto Veropter. Patients still think that is pretty high technology because they see it being run, although by the doctor, on a computer and so forth. it doesn't look anywhere near as mechanical as some of the prior manual phiropters.
That's so true. When I practice in our office that has the auto phiropter, everybody's like, ooh, this is so fancy. But it's really the same dang thing. But that's okay. It glows in the dark when the lights go off. So it's really mesmerizing.
But Jen, you prefer the actual manual phiropter, right? Instead of the automated one?
Well, heck yeah, I do. Well, I just find it, you try scoping a patient through the automated phiropter.
Correct. No, there's one downfall. That's the ability to do retinoscopy through an autofaropter. I agree with you on that.
But I guess we're just too old school. The world is advancing right before our eyes. That's okay. If all it takes is a little bit of a phoropter appearance update to keep us in the game, I think we'll all be okay with it.
And the other thing I do tell them, I said, tell patients if they inquire about some of these new online apps that I explain, well, those were really originally developed for third world mission trips. And I said, they may be fine in a country where, or in a situation where you don't have more sophisticated instruments and there's a language barrier and so forth. It certainly will spit out a prescription that's better than nothing.
I think in today's market, you're going to have people that are very value driven or they're technology driven. And as far as they're consuming, trends. And so I think if you can present your practice as embracing technology and show that you're more current, whether it's in instrumentation, whether it's in technology for trying on eyewear, interactive, an online presence, I think that's going to capture patients to come into your office versus, going online. But, let's face it, I think that those are the middle ground, I think, is just kind of gone. And so you're going to have people who are going to seek out a value, but I think how many people do you see with flip phones anymore? It's just not happening. So I think technology-driven offices are going to do great. And I think, Mark, your point as far as the customer service aspect and making sure that there's a great patient experience, those offices are going to thrive. So in today's world, whether you're in a corporate business or you're in a small business, I think you have to, as Daryl said, you have to be proactive instead of having to react to things that are happening. So sharpen your pencil, your stylus, see where your industry is going or where your patients are going. And make an adjustment.
So, so true. I mean, we just have to wow every time we encounter a patient. And of course, we're going to have days when we're tired or exhausted or we've said the same thing 20 times. But every patient opportunity that you make very unexciting and tedious and boring is a potential person who might reconsider spending money at your optical next year. So, something that we have to do as optometry to in our own offices, make it an exciting experience that creates a value every single patient encounter.
Absolutely.
So thank you guys so much for coming on the show today. If anyone listening has questions for you or wants to get some insight into how you've been so successful in your business, would you mind sharing how they could best get in touch with you?
No, we'd love to do that.
Our email address is U as in Uptown, V as in Vision, C Clinic, UVC at UptownVision.com.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here. Pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.